We will consider in this talk the following nonlinear wave equations, completely resonant, namely utt minus uxx is equal to f of x and u. Suppose, for example, we take Dirichlet, Dirichlet boundary conditions, and we consider the case completely resonant, namely that the nonlinearity f of x and u starts, in fact, with just nonlinear terms, namely t greater or equal than 2. So this, for this reason, there is no linear term a1 of x u into the equation. In this case, we shall call these equations completely resonant. We shall look indeed at this problem as a dynamical system into the phase space, which is just H10 pi H10, because, for example, we have chosen Dirichlet boundary conditions. So U is equal to 0, as is well known, is an elliptic equilibrium. And the linearized equation of this elliptic equilibrium is completely degenerate because of this fact, namely it is a UTT minus UXX is equal to 0 with Dirichlet conditions. And so the spectrum, so this is a set of infinite harmonic oscillators, the eigenvalues of minus DXX with these conditions has a spectrum which is are all integer numbers, RJ squared. And hence, all the solutions of these equations can be written like that. Any solutions V is 2π periodic in time and can be written, for example, as linear superpositions on the basis sinus of Jx of oscillations like, for example, in real forms, oscillations with a certain amplitude Aj and with a frequency which is J. So they are completely resonant. All we have, and all the solutions of this problem is 2π periodic in time. So the space of solutions of the limiting linearized equations is an infinite dimensional space of 2π periodic in time solutions, which can be written like this, or it is also useful to look at the linear superpositions of two waves, so which can be written equivalently in the same way as the linear superposition of two waves which travels in opposite directions, where eta is 2π periodic in time. 2π periodic. So this is the kernel of all the solutions. The two waves must have the same amplitude because of the Dirichlet boundary conditions. So this is exactly the kernel. The problem that we consider is the problem to find periodic solutions of the nonlinear system close to the origin. So to continue some of these linear solutions into the nonlinear problem. So the problem is indeed to find periodic solutions of the equations W, let's call this wave W equation, close to zero. Close to U equal to zero. Okay, let us make a little non-result, a bit of history. First, in finite dimension, the existence in finite dimensions, the existence of periodic solutions close to completely resonant elliptic equilibrium has been considered by Weinstein, Moser, and Fadel and Rabinowitz, and Fadel and Rabinowitz in 73, 76, and 78. And okay. Unfortunately, I've never met him. And the way in which they find solutions is through the Lyapunov-Schmidt decomposition. Both of these three papers are based on the Lyapunov-Schmidt decompositions, which splits the problem of finding periodic solutions close to of the nonlinear system close to the equilibrium in solving two equations. One is a range equation which is solved in this case, in the finite dimensional case, through the implicit function theorem. Start an implicit function theorem. And the other one is to study a bifurcation equation, which of course is finite dimensional for finite dimensional systems, and which is solved through variational methods exploiting the fact that the system is Hamiltonian. Okay, in extending these results to infinite dimensional systems, namely to find the periodic solutions for completely resonant PDEs like these, two main problems arise. One, of course, in solving this path, one in solving the range equation is a small divisor problem. And so which does not allow in general to use the implicit function theorem. And the second one is, the fact that now the bifurcation equation is infinite dimensional. Is the infinite dimensional bifurcation equations. Okay. Of course, this problem one is in fact explained by this, the fact that at the linear level we have an infinite dimensional space of 2π periodic in time solutions. The small divisor problem, on the contrary, is, of course, arises as well known because looking at the spectrum of the D'Alembert operator, namely UTT minus UXX, in the space of functions which are 2π over omega periodic in time with values in the phase space H10, The spectrum is omega 2 L2 minus J2, where so L is an integer, Z and J is greater or equal than 1. Okay, so the first result for completely resonant wave equations has been given by Linsky and Shulman and by Dario Bambusi and Simone Paleari. In which these two problems have been solved for the nonlinearity F, which starts with a U cube term, an odd term which is a U cube, and choosing on the frequency omega of the periodic orbit one looks for to belong to a to impose a very strong non-resonant conditions, namely which to belong to a zero measure set of frequencies, which is uncountable, accumulates to omega equal to 1, but for which the spectrum, which is omega 2 L2 minus J2, does not accumulate to 0. So because of this reason, in this way, they overcome the small divisor problem 1, and the fact that there is a U cube term here is in order to solve the infinite dimensional bifurcation equations. Because the infinite dimensional bifurcation equation, when the nonlinearity is a U cube, at the first order it reduces to a dynamical system, which has, by inspection, non-degenerate periodic solutions. Okay, in a previous work with Philip Ball, we had using the same set of frequencies omega, this zero measure set of frequencies, but in order to, we had found results for a for any nonlinearity f of x and u, because we solved the infinite dimensional bifurcation equations by means of a variational method, which allows to find always periodic solutions. Of course, what I wanted to speak now is to find periodic solutions for a positive measure set of frequencies, so to remove the, in fact, how to tackle problem one, and so is to the problem to help find what I wanted to discuss now is to find periodic solutions, found periodic solutions for a positive measure set of frequencies omega. Concerning this problem, there are two results that I want on this problem. One is by Burgen, 1999, with periodic boundary conditions, and where the nonlinearity f of x and u is u cube plus a specific nonlinearity, which is the where aj of x are even and trigonometric polynomials, and from 4 to a certain d, in which indeed, so using in which he finds the periodic solutions for a positive measure set of frequencies, and in order to solve the bifurcation equations, now indeed that here it is different. The need for u cube is due to the fact that as he works not with the Dirichlet boundary condition but with periodic boundary conditions, the equations u to t minus uxx is equal to u cube has exactly traveling waves solutions which can be found as so directly. And bifurcating from these, he finds the true solutions of the whole system bifurcating from exact solutions of the unperturbed systems. And there is a recent result by Gentile, Mastro Pietro, and Procesi for that equation, when the nonlinearity f of u is analytic odd, so is an analytic odd nonlinearity, and also starts with the u cube. Again, also here, the presence of the term u cube is linked to the way the bifurcation equation must be solved. The fact that it must be odd is that the phase space that is considered is a phase space of functions whose with the skew symmetric extension, which is analytic. And the first problem, the small divisor problem, is solved by means of the Lindstedt series method. Okay, what I want to discuss now are so a joint result with Philip Boll on the existence of periodic solutions for this completely resonant nonlinear equation for of course, positive measure set. Positive measure set of frequencies for a generic nonlinearity, so not only u cube, but for generic nonlinearity. For this, we will have so to study in a special way the bifurcation equation. In particular, we do not require not oddness assumption on the nonlinearity f. And the small divisor problem we solve is we solve it by Nash-Moser scheme, and would like to present a new way to solve the inversion of the linearized problem, which is not the technique of Frohlich and Spencer, but and which adapts also for not odd nonlinearities. Okay, so I start to describe which is the problem. The main problems and how we solve the main problems for this equation and how we solve this. Okay, so first of all, instead of looking for solutions in a shrinking neighborhood of the origin, we perform, of course, a rescaling, and we look in order one neighbors of the origin. So it leads to the equations UTT minus UXX is equal delta P minus 1. Let's also, for simplicity, now ignore these terms here. So the nonlinearity is only APX u to the power P, so will be this one. Okay, and since the system is autonomous, the periodic orbit that we are looking for will have possibly a different period, so we rescale also time, we introduce the period as a parameter, and so we look, now the problem is to look for 2π periodic solutions of order 1 of this equation. So 2π periodic in time solutions of this equation of order 1. And we look in the phase space, in the loop space, which is x sigma s. So it's the space of all functions which are analytic in time, but with values in h10, and only in h10, so finite differentiability in 0. We do not require it to be a series in sinus of jx, which is analytic, so u of tx, series of for l in z, UL of X, where UL of X so is the Fourier coefficient, which lives in the space H10 pi. Of course, we require the functions to be real. And so we require that it is analytic in time, and so the summability condition that the series of the certain exponential e to sigma L times L to L plus 1 times the H1 norm of the Fourier coefficient is finite. This is the norm sigma S squared. Okay, so we assume only analytic in time with values in the phase space. Okay. Okay, if we follow the natural Lyapunov-Schmidt decomposition, so we look for solutions U equal V plus W, where V will be a solutions of the space of the linear equations, capital V, and this will take account of nonlinear terms, of high order linear terms, and we put into the orthogonal space to V. Namely, so we have the decompositions V, which are the solution of the linear space, V, which is V orthogonal, and is the space of functions, so which are series E, L of E, W, L of X. And in order to be orthogonal, we have to require that the Fourier coefficient W, L of X is a function which is orthogonal to sinus of Lx. This is equal to zero. So let us call pi on W, the projections on this space, and pi of V, the projection on the kernel. And so the equation, the wave equation is equivalent to the following two equations, which is, of course, omega t dtt V minus dxx V is equal to d pi P minus 1, is that equation. This is the projection on the kernel. AP of X, V plus W to the power P, and the orthogonal equations, which is this one. Okay, so this is the range equation, where the small divisor problem appears. So this is the bifurcation equation. Let us write in a slightly better form the bifurcation equations, using that V are all solutions of the wave equation. VTP is equal V of X. So we write this in the following form, like omega 2 minus 1 over 2 Laplacian of V, Laplacian V is VTT plus VXX is equal to delta T minus 1. Okay, this is the equation. And to simplify notations, we call the operator L omega. L omega is the differential operator, this one. So the two equations that we have finally are the following. L omega W is equal to delta P minus 1 projection over W, AP of X, V plus W. Okay. The space V is the space of solutions of the linearized equation, so it's the linear superposition of the on each eigenvector sine of jx of the harmonic oscillator with frequency j, which is an integer. No. Okay, yes, of course, they are both in space-time. Namely, these are the loops, 2-pi periodic in time, into H10x. Of course. Okay. Okay, so let us finally write in a better form. So we set the perturbative parameter delta P minus 1, which link it to the amplitude, let us call epsilon. So this is epsilon. And we link, also now we impose a relation between the frequency and the amplitude. So we require omega 2 minus 1 over 2. It is given to epsilon, minus epsilon. And so it is equal to minus delta P minus 1. This we impose, we can think as a relation between the frequency and the amplitude. With this simplification, with this imposition, we finally arrived at the following equations, which are simple. So the bifurcation equation is an elliptic equation minus Laplacian V is equal to the projection over V, AP of X, V plus W to the power P. And, the other equation, which is this one. Okay. So this is sometimes the bifurcation equation, sometimes called the Q equation, this is the P equation. Okay, now which is the main problems that we see looking at this system and trying to apply the well-known procedure by Craig and Wayne is that if we start with a certain function V left as a parameter into the bifurcation space, in a space, say, of analytic functions, after we solve through a Nash-Moser scheme or another scheme the equation W due to the presence of small divisors, we will have found that W as a function of V will certainly have a lower regularity. Namely, say, for example, B is a say, for example, sigma over 2 times S. But hence, if we close the circle, namely we insert WV into the bifurcation equations, there is an incoherence because WV has a lower regularity, and we will never find the solutions of the complete bifurcation equations with the initial regularity. So there is a contradiction. We cannot at least immediately apply this scheme. And the related problem to this is, we said that the solutions of the nonlinear system we are looking for will be given by a certain solution V of the linear equation plus higher order corrections. V is determined by the zero order approximated equations, bifurcation equations, which is simply the zero order bifurcation equation is simply obtained neglecting the higher order terms W, which will be of order epsilon, so will be something like this. and the problem is to know, but does this equation has always solutions? Are they analytic? Because I must know if they're analytic if I wish to start with a Nash-Moser scheme. Do these zeros order bifurcation equation has analytic solutions? Okay. Okay, the big difference is the fact that there is no linear term into F, so here I start with AP of X u to the power P with P greater or equal than 2. So the linearized equation at the origin is completely degenerate because all the spectrum is are integer numbers. And so there is not a parameter used to impose some non-reference conditions. Exactly. And in fact, in that case, the bifurcation equation comes out to be finite dimensional.
So you were just one parameter of
that? No parameter. And so the bifurcation yes. Okay. Okay, so we solved both these two problems that we see now. So problem one, this problem of which are due to the infinite dimensional character. Indeed, performing still a Lyapunov-Schmidt decomposition still on a finite dimensional subspace. On a finite dimensional subspace that I wanted to describe now, which has a dimension which is independent of the perturbation, depends only on the nonlinearity. So given the nonlinearity AP of X, I can find the finite dimensional subspace on which we can perform the Lyapunov-Schmidt decomposition and hence still obtaining the result. What do I mean? So we decompose V, which is the space of all solutions of the linear problem, into the direct sum of two subspaces, V1 plus V2, where V1 are the solutions where V1 so are the solutions the low modes of the in the kernel of the kernel, namely V1 is the sum for J is equal 1 to just a certain fixed N to be chosen later of linear superpositions of the mode sinus of Jx, and here we get some oscillations with integer frequency J. And V2 are the solution on the kernel with the high modes. So is the V solution for J greater than N of this. So if we do this, now, after we have to specify omega, it means that in fact, we will not find even. Now I've just written to simplify here. Okay, there is not a restriction here. You can put also. Okay, so we split again the kernel V into two subspaces, which are V1, which is finite dimensional, and V2. And so the Lyapunov-Schmidt decomposition splits the first bifurcation equations Q into two equations, which are Q1 and Q2, which will be the projection on the first finite dimensional subspace V1 and the projection on the finite dimensional subspace V2. So looking for solutions VU, which now are V1 plus V2 plus W, V1 plus V2 is equal to the V which is in the complete kernel. So we get two equations, projection on the V1 of AP of X with V1 plus V2 plus W power P minus projection of a V2 AP of X V1 plus V2 plus W to the power P, and the third equation, which of course is the same. So I do not write. So this is what we call the Q1 equation, this is the Q2 equation, and this is the P equation. So now the system that we have are these three systems. The strategy now that we follow to solve this system, so is first we solve the Q2 equation, which are the equations for the bifurcation equations in the kernel for the high modes. And so we will find the V2 as a function of delta V1 and W. After that, we solve the P equation, the range equation, obtaining W as a function of delta and V1. And hence, we can insert again to the Q1 equation to follow the strategy proposed by Craig and Wayne. Okay, and the important fact that I wanted to explain is why this function here can be obtained on a finite dimensional space of dimension n, independent of all the perturbative parameters, only depending on the initial perturbations f of x. Okay, let us cancel something. Okay. So, I start with the solution of the Q2 equation. How much time is left? 13. One could obtain, yes. Yes, one could obtain also such kind of results. Because indeed the bifurcation equations that now in fact I solve has indeed much more solutions because, solution of the equation P2. The solution for which the reason for which we can perform this five-dimensional reduction is look at the zero-order bifurcation equation, which is this one. In order to solve this, we observe that it is the Euler-Lagrange equation of a fractional, which is the integral of gradient v squared over 2 minus at plus 1 x v t plus 1 over t plus 1, the t dx integrated in the domain omega, which is the torus times 0. So time t lives in the torus and the variable x lives here. So the Euler-Lagrange equations of this fractional gives rise to solutions of these. And in fact, these always has solutions because looking at its form, so why this function always has critical points in the space H1, it is very easy applying some results of minimax critical point theory, because if in the space V intersected with H1, this functional has a local minimum at the origin, so is positive in a small neighborhood of the origin, because of the nonlinearity with p is greater or equal than 2, it becomes negative at some point. And so it possesses the so-called mountain pass geometry. So a local minimum at the origin and after it becomes negative. And so by applying the Ambrosetti-Rabinowitz mountain pass theorem, there exists always a critical level C and with a certain compact set K0 of critical points. So this equation always has in view into this space solutions. There exists a compact critical set of solutions V of the equation at a certain level, positive, which is compact in H1, but hence directly by bootstrap argument we realize that hence, by bootstrap, I realize that these solutions here are always belong to HS for any S, so are infinity omega functions. Okay. So the bifurcation equation always has solutions, but we do not know if there are, first, two problems. We don't know if they are analytic. And, okay. What we state is, however, that we can, due to the effect, the regularizing effect of the Green operator minus Laplacian 2 minus 1, all the solutions of this equation can be reconstructed starting from the first n modes. Namely, all the solutions are graphs only on the first n modes. I mean that we can always construct all the solutions V of these elliptic equations as the sum of a V1 term, which has only the Fourier components of the low-order Fourier components, times V2. V2 is the, has only the high Fourier components, and we can always express by the implicit function theorem V2 has a function of V1 in order that V is a solution of these equations, so that the solutions can be, in fact, seen as a graph over a finite dimensional subspace. This is, in fact, the usual Lyapunov-Schmidt decomposition for these problems, which is very standard. And, okay, let us make one computation which enables to understand what indeed is going on, and we can erase perhaps. Okay. So, because of this, we know that all the solutions are C infinity and are so bounded. All the solutions of the zero-order bifurcation equation satisfy this a priori estimate. They are bounded for a certain R positive. We wanted to reconstruct them so as the sum of a finite dimensional portion, which so will be for sure analytic, and a higher dimensional portion. And we wanted to find the V2 as a function of a V1 by means of the of a contraction principle in an analytic space of functions. And so this is easily realized because V2 must solve looking at the Q2 equations there is given by minus Laplacian minus 1, the projection on the high modes of the kernel times AP of X V1 plus V2 power P. But hence, on the high modes of the kernel minus Laplacian, I wanted to see that this operator is a contraction. But on the high modes, namely on V2, minus Laplacian minus 1 is gives a factor 1 over M2. And so to see that this is a contraction, I have to see that mainly that in a space of analytic functions, that if V2 sigma s in a certain ball of radius rho, so of this in this space V2, I wanted to show that this is a contraction, so that if V2 has a norm less than rho, the whole operator, the whole the image will have a norm, analytic norm less than rho. But this is of course clear because this is given by, now we are truncating on the first n mode, so this is exponential e sigma to the certain power n times the norm V1 0 s plus 1 to the power p. But we know that we already had the easy estimate in each HS, the a priori estimate in each HS, and so we know that this is less than a certain constant R to the power P, and choosing sigma N less than a certain constant, this is the whole, this term here is bounded by a certain constant. Hence, for N large enough, this map, this operator here will be a contraction. So, okay, I've been a bit sketchy, but this is the essential idea. And so we see also that the number n, which is the finite dimensional space, depends only on R. On R, which is this ball on which we have found the a priori estimates, depends only on the first term of the nonlinearity AP of X.
Minus sigma n?
E to the, no, sigma n, this could become worse, because I am estimating an analytic norm with only a subleft norm, so I have a big coefficient. But if sigma times n is less than 1, this is less than a constant, fixed constant. So the conditions will be sigma n less, for example, than 1, and n large depending on R. So I will find n larger depending on r. If sigma satisfies this condition, I have found a contraction in the space of sigma functions which have this n. No, no, no. Now n is fixed. No, yes, now n is fixed. I will fix it from the beginning now. So one gives me at the beginning the nonlinearity. I give AOP. I get this a priori estimate with this capital R. With this capital R, I get the finite dimensional reduction n. Hence, I get the sigma, which is the analytic space in which I can perform my reduction, and I stop. After that, I will start the Nash-Moser scheme for the P equation. Okay, and the important thing that will be useful for the Nash-Moser scheme is that the function V indeed is not only, here we have found has a contraction in the space of functions X sigma S, namely with analyticity sigma and S subspace, but it is indeed a bit more regular because V is equal to minus Laplacian to minus 1, so V2 is indeed more regular, namely belongs to sigma S plus 2. So it is more regular. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Exactly. Okay, I wanted to say just some words on the way in which we solve the equation P, because just the way for inverting, so the major problem is the inversion of the linearized problem of the Nash-Moser scheme, and we perform in a different way than the usual scheme by Walter and Jean, and so I would like to describe it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Why arise the 1 over n? Yes, sorry. V2 are the spaces with only have high Fourier components. So on the high, no, it gives 1 over n2. The advantage of taking?
N bigger than 1.
No, I must.
N bigger than 2, then.
Yes. I wanted to take n large, but I wanted to show, and this is the key point, that it is independent of omega. It depends only on the problem. So I will, if you give me this problem, I will find a finite dimensional sufficiently large, but finite and independent of all finite dimensional subspace on which I will perform the finite dimensional reduction. But this is indeed perhaps which can help you intuitively is simply the fact that the spectrum that I've written at the beginning is this one. In the kernel, n is equal to j, so is this one. Is omega 2 minus 1 j squared. But so it is the main reason is indeed that when j is larger, we do not, this is regularizing, so it is not a kernel equation. Must be put into some other equation. Must be put into the must be put into equation which in fact can be solved by means of a certain contraction. This is here, if I do in a naive way, not uniform in omega, because I only would say that this is greater than gamma for a certain omega-dependent subspace. But observing that all the solutions will lie in a finite-dimensional subspace, finding first this a priori estimate, in fact, here, this is not the ingredient of the nonlinearity AP of X. But given AP of X, I have an a priori bound, and using that gives me, in fact, this a priori bound R, and will fix in an independent omega way the finite dimensional reduction over which I have to perform it. So just I say a word about the way in which we invert the linearized operator on the obtained by the Nash-Moser scheme. And this, so we have to invert the following operator. We have to linearize the final equation, so we have to invert the following operator, minus epsilon projection of W, AP of X, D1, we have to differentiate with respect to W, recalling now that V2 has been obtained as a function of the V1 and W. This gives two terms, which are H, which comes from the differentiability of phi, plus the dV over W applied to H. So this is the linear operator that we have to invert. Okay, in order to invert, so first simplify some notations, this will be a given function A of t and x. So, of course, we develop just in Fourier time expansion, not in space. So in order to invert, we isolate first the here we take only the zero Fourier coefficient in time, minus epsilon projection on W. Here we put the function A bar of t of x, which is obtained through a zero mean. And after, we have this other effect, which comes from the high modes, so which is epsilon projection of W, which is A of tx, B applied to this. So this is the linear operator that we have. Here we have, so this operator here in time Fourier expansions is diagonal. Only in time Fourier expansion, so is a diagonal operator, is diagonal matrix of operators, D1, D3, Dk. Because this is the Fourier coefficients in time, At of x in dt, between 0 and 2 pi. This will be a Toeplitz matrix, which is a 0 on the Toeplitz matrix of operators, which is a 0 on the 0 diagonal. Okay, and after there is this further term to show to be small. So what we do is, just 1 minute, so I invert. So we, for the time being, we have just expanded in time. Now we, and these ones are operators from H10 into H10. So we diagonalize now also in space these operators, finding its spectrum through Sturm-Liouville theory in H10. And now we impose on this the Cantor condition, which ensure that this map has although the eigenvalues of this map are polynomially bounded away from zero. Hence, we have to show that the Toeplitz matrix is small with respect to this. To do this, and after that, these and these are small perturbations of this object here. In order to do this, we find convenient calling this big operator D. We find convenient to rescale, because still the eigenvalues of this goes to zero, so in order to see that this map is a small perturbation, we find convenient to write this as follows. Let us call this operator M1. And plus, okay, there will be also the other ones. And now this operator here is simply this matrix, but now divided by the operators dk and ds. Okay, from this we give a lower bound for each operator dl, and so what we need simply to show is that the product of two eigenvalues of two quantities, the least eigenvalues of dk and the least eigenvalues of dl, their product is not too small when k and l are sufficiently close. And inside, this is a quite easy computation. And okay, and so this allows to prove that this operator is small with respect to this. To show that this is small with respect to this, we use indeed the compactness of this map, the fact that the V2 is in fact has again a bit of regularity, and so this still allows to prove that this is smaller with respect to this operator here. And okay, so this is the main point, and allows, so it's very simple, and allows to deal also with not odd non-linearities, because we have not developed in an analytic sinus of JX series. Okay, after that, the solution of the Q1 equation is standard. We can impose genericity conditions on the perturbations in order that it has non-degenerate critical points, and this is obtained indeed because V1 is a finite dimension. So it is still a generic condition. And that is all.